Welcome to Brand and Deliver, the podcast dedicated to great professional services marketing. In each episode, we're joined by marketing leaders from across professional services firms as we explore how they create strategies designed to deliver genuine value. I hope you enjoy the episode.
In this episode, Alex and I are joined by Kate Martin, Chief Marketing Officer at GateOne. Kate's career to date is a fascinating one and has seen her hold marketing roles at a range of firms, including Deloitte, BCG, and now, of course, GateOne. During this time, Kate has scaled and led marketing teams of all sizes to build impactful strategies, execute multi-channel campaigns, and deliver results that drive business growth. But it's not all been plain sailing. As was the case for many marketers, the pandemic in 2020 changed the game. For Kate, who was in a global events role at the time, it meant her and her team needed to rethink their entire strategy. Today, we'll cover how they achieved that, what Kate learned from the experience, and explore what good event marketing looks like for consulting firms. So welcome to the podcast, Kate. Thanks for making the time. And we're really looking forward to speaking with you today.
Thank you for having me.
There is so much I want us to try and cover off in today's episode, not least learning more about your first year as CMO at GateOne. But to kick off, I want to go back to 2012 when you joined BCG as head of UK marketing. It was the start of an 11-year journey with the firm, during which you held a range of positions with responsibilities across the globe. And I know we'll come on to talking about those in a little bit more detail at some point today. But let's start with that first one, that head of UK marketing role. What was your remit when you initially stepped into that role, and what is it that you were setting out to achieve?
Yeah, so it kind of does what it says on the tin, really. I think I was tasked with leading a very small pre-existing team. BCG at the time was, I guess, a medium-sized consultancy compared to some of the others in the landscape, and, you know, was on a journey to grow and scale, not just in the UK, but in the context of BCG and counterparts in other geographies. And yeah, it was a time where marketing was really changing from professional services being really focused on events and content to kind of a much broader mix of marketing channels, marketing ambitions, trying to bring marketing and business development a little bit closer together, although that took a few years and is still an ongoing journey, I think, for a lot of the team. But it was really the opportunity to try and scale and grow and accelerate that growth through the power of marketing, which led me to my role there.
Sounds like it was quite an exciting time to join the business. And as you say, a lot going on outside of marketing that is all geared towards that kind of growth and growth at speed. But what did you mentioned? There was a small team that was already there. What did marketing look like for BCG at that time? And what did you inherit?
So I inherited a very wonderful and capable small team of three members. So a marketing assistant, an events manager, and a PR manager. And, you know, they were doing pretty amazing things with a very small budget and, you know, very limited engagement from the partner group at the time. And so I inherited this passionate group of people who were very happy to come on the journey with me and with us. And we're excited to have a bit more leverage, I think, with the partner group in kind of bringing my role in and, you know, setting out on this path to continue to scale and grow and really show what the power of marketing can do for building relationships, building revenue and kind of enhancing BCG's reputation at the time, which was much less than it is now in the UK.
That's a really interesting point you made there around partner engagement, because I think that's a challenge that a lot of professional services marketers have. I'd be interested to dig into that a little bit. And how did you kind of get that buy-in, and how did you align those marketing goals with those broader sort of business goals, I suppose, and get that engagement from the partner group?
It was a slog, and I'm not sure we ever really cracked it. I'm not sure we ever will really crack it, especially in an organization that is, you know, like BCG, highly matrixed, partner-led. It's very, very challenging. And if anything that I've learned from my time at both at Deloitte, BCG, you know, and now in GateOne, it's about internal audiences are the most important, and kind of winning the hearts and minds of those internal stakeholders has to come first. Until you've got that in place, it's really difficult to get all your marketing where it needs to get to. And, you know, it was just walking the floor, making, you know, friends with the partner groups, their teams, their EAs, their groups of stakeholders that could really help amplify and accelerate the work that we're doing in marketing. you know, tell that story with us and be advocates of the cause. And that's a full-time job in itself, just being out there and kind of banging the drum and showing and convincing and explaining the value that marketing can bring to your sector, your industry, your client, your one relationship. And yeah, as I said, that's, you know, that almost took up most of the time, just kind of being, you know, being present and really showcasing what is available, you know, the power of marketing and why it's important to listen and engage.
And in terms of, it's a big question and probably quite a difficult one. And what was the kind of first practical step there? I think that kind of alignment of strategic thinking to kind of bridge the gap between marketing and the kind of business side of things probably came into it. But I maybe paint that picture in terms of, was marketing at that point seen as a function that was needed but wasn't aligned to the business? And was that a kind of priority for you to readjust when you went in?
Yeah, I think so. I remember it being quite transactional. You know, there was pockets of marketing excellence and some really good established ways of working and relationships with the business and the marketing team, but they were pockets and not universal. And so I think just coaching and guiding the business on how marketing is not just a service provider, but a strategic engine for the organization was really front and center of the work that we were doing in the early days and absolutely continued through the 11 years that I was there, you know, demonstrating that value, being humble with it as well. So lots of listening, lots of respect for the work that the consultants do and the partners do with their accounts and their clients and just phenomenal business developers, but showing how marketing can be an enabler to that journey as well, rather than a distractor or something that's going to hinder that relationship. And again, that takes time and trust to win that over and just continuously demonstrating why marketing can help on all of those dimensions had to be as part of everything that we did internally and also externally as well.
And is that something you'd seen work well at Deloitte and in your previous role, and you could kind of take lessons from that and apply to BCG? Or were there not too many parallels there that you could draw on?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the context was very similar, very large organization, lots of stakeholders, lots of headstrong individuals, lots of marketing experts, even outside of the marketing organization. I'm sure that would resonate as well. So the mission was quite similar. I think the scale of effort in BCG at the time was much smaller. So it felt a little bit more, a little easier really to try and influence at that level. And whilst actually even now compared to Gate One, BCG feels enormous compared to where we are now, where I'm sitting right next to the team that is speaking to clients every day. And so I'm just learning their relationship habits and what's happening in the organization so much easier than I did at either of my previous organizations. You have to get to that really quickly, and you have to, you know, you have to understand and really listen and want to know what makes those partners, those consultants tick. And why they're doing that is because they understand what makes their client tick and what makes that buying decision much easier. And so, yeah, just kind of being in that zone, I think, has really helped in every organization, just at a slightly different scale, I would say.
Absolutely. And maybe, and you can say how long this took, but once you got that engagement from the partners, did the floodgates open and then your role shifted to how do we take on all of these different requests, opinions, thoughts, and channel them into a coherent marketing strategy? That's the other side of the coin, is once they're engaged, it's floodgates and how do we deal with it from here? So how did you approach that? Did your team scale in size and capabilities scale as well to adapt to those requests and those expectations?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that, you know, happened over a period of probably a couple of years at BCG, where our marketing plan was a set of things we felt like we should do. And we gradually moved that into a strategy that was aligned to the business plan, that was aligned to the growth plan for the region and for, you know, for the company globally. And so absolutely kind of pivoting from that very operational marketing to strategic and operational marketing. And yes, I do remember the product of our great work was that we had an even longer list of people coming to the team needing and wanting, you know, wanting to engage, which is a nice problem to have. But I think as the leader of a team, created new challenges in, you know, protecting the team, making sure that they weren't overworked, overwhelmed, working on the right things at the right time. But with the right element of flexibility. And, you know, we have to be agile and we have to be flexible in our approach. We can't, you know, we can't just say no to everything. We have to listen and be part of those business planning conversations so that we can be adaptive. And so, yeah, again, that's another element that I really see being kind of carried through to my role at Gate One, which is, you know, quite quickly we kind of created a bit of noise and momentum. And now it's like, okay, well, how do we manage the flow now? And just how do we make sure that everyone's listened to, you know, we hear, we understand, but we really focus on the why and like, why are we doing this thing? Why are we doing it now? What impact is it going to have? Maybe we try a few new things and it's fine, but just really kind of coming back to that point of there's three of us right now. You know, we have to be really strong-minded to kind of make sure that we're protecting ourselves and also doing the right thing at the right time.
Definitely. And I think a lot of that, I imagine, is around educating people who maybe aren't marketing-minded to what marketing is trying to achieve and how they can play a role within that as well. Because I think it's something we see with our clients quite a lot when we're talking to them about that, exactly what you're talking about. How do we balance? We don't want to dissuade people or kill the enthusiasm once they're engaged, but we need to make sure that they're engaging in a way that aligns with what we're trying to do from a strategic perspective. And I imagine it's the same challenges or similar to what you had. So how much of it was around kind of upskilling and educating, so when things and requests got to you, they were in a form that you could move with quite quickly?
Yeah, I think, again, that's change management, and that's really hard, especially in, you know, large organizations. And I think just, you know, creating processes and governance and ways of working helps. But I think you just, again, it kind of comes down to just being out there and engaging with people and really trying to understand. And I think the power of aligning mindset shifts has been fantastic and such an unlock. So, you know, not just saying no or yes, but why, it's demonstrating why, you know, asking a different set of questions will perhaps come back to the same area or the same impact or the same result, but you've thought about it in a much more cohesive, comprehensive, strategic way. And again, yeah, that's something that I see even more relevant when resources are constrained, the team is constrained, the to-do list is just growing and growing and growing because there's just so much to do. Just kind of really being honest on that question of why now is really critical.
No, I completely agree. And we'll maybe come on to it later, but that gets an added level of complication when the actual channels that you're using for marketing are also changing so quickly and there's new ways of using those channels as well. And so there's a whole other matrix to layer on top of that that probably is equally difficult to manage.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's only so much one person can do. And so, yeah, really relying on the expertise that's in the organization, you know, even outside of the marketing team, because, you know, many ears and eyes make light work on understanding what channels are working the best and, you know, what's new out there, what new tools and ways of working or systems or content or events that kind of resonate with key clients or key sectors, et cetera, is really important. So two-way feedback is actually really fundamental to the work that I'm doing now. And, you know, certainly at BCG is just listening and absorbing as much as you can, because, you know, with such a finite team, there's only so much you can do at once.
That's really interesting. Actually, just to come back to something that you said there and making sure that I've understood it right, is so you're actually in some ways encouraged people out across the organization to bring ideas, not just around the sort of technical side of things, but also from that marketing perspective as well. So what have they seen that they've engaged with that could be something that we could look at in our strategy? That was something that you actively encouraged, as opposed to, you know, no, we've got a plan, let's kind of stick to the plan, but engage with the plan, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I mean, I think even more so at Gate One, where, you know, the work that we are supporting our clients in is quite adjacent to marketing. You know, we're helping companies transform their own marketing organizations. We're helping clients think through customer experience, employee experience. And there's so much commonality with what we're trying to do, you know, as a Gate One, as a marketing company. And so absolutely, I think, you know, we're learning a lot, actually. I'm personally learning a lot from being close to the work and close to the clients and, you know, what impact we're bringing to them. And then above that, just being in the Havas ecosystem. So, you know, Gate One's parent company is Havas, you know, an enormously successful global marketing and media communications agency. And so just by osmosis, it's hard to get away from such fantastic expertise in the building that we can tap into. And, you know, there's a, you know, a pocket of experts on CRM or on SEO or on customer experience that we can just go and absorb ourselves in. So that's really compelling as a marketer who's born and bred professional services, but being in that space now where, you know, absorbing all the marketing vibes, it's been really, really great.
That's brilliant. And it sounds, and we'll kind of, I'm very keen to dig into that first sort of year. We're coming up to a year at Gate One and kind of dig into how that's taken shape and kind of what you've seen and during that time as well. Before we do that, I'm keen to just jump back a little bit to BCG and that time where, as you said, we've touched on that UK head of UK marketing role, which you were in until 2017. And then your role and focus shifted more towards the sort of global event side of things until you left in 2023. Now, the ears of a lot of our listeners will be pricking up at the mention of events, as I know that it's a topic that professional services marketers debate a lot, and it's certainly something that we talk to our clients about regularly. But before we dive into the kind of pros and cons of events, which I think will be, I'm very looking forward to doing, how did that change in role come about? Was it motivated by the increase in geographical scope of role, or was events something that you mentioned as part of your UK role was quite broad but included events? Was that something actually you saw the value in and wanted to then kind of focus on and specialise in?
Yeah. So, I mean, events has always been part of my DNA, I suppose, from organising the sixth form prom and, you know, all of the things that go along with being at that time of life, and was my very first role outside, you know, out of university at Deloitte, actually. So there was always a part of me that, you know, naturally gravitated to the events channel. The step from the UK role into the global role, there was a time actually in between where I spent some time in a marketing operations role, which was trying to build some kind of cohesion amongst my European peer group at BCG. So just like knowledge sharing, best practice sharing, how can we do more together if we align plans? And a part of the focus of that work was trying to reimagine how we might think about event programs and what that meant for building relationships. And so, you know, the outcome of a piece of work that I was involved in was the kind of creation of a new role. And events, we ran hundreds of events at BCG, but there wasn't one team or, you know, one group that was really looking at how we do that better together. And so the role came about, you know, and was kind of set about trying to build a strategy for events. You know, what does events at BCG look and feel like? You know, when people show up to a BCG event, what do we want them to think, feel, do? What are the right events for us to take part in, both, you know, our own native event programs and networks and communities that we're looking to build, but which, you know, which other external third-party events should we be partnering with in order to give the right brand exposure, the right platforms for sharing content and ideas, and the right places to convene with the, you know, individuals that we are looking to build relationships with. And so, yeah, it was a fairly natural journey in that regard. And it meant that over the last part of my tenure at BCG, building a team out to really focus on the strategy, the operations, so actually delivering events as well as how do we enable and kind of bring the business along with us to ensure that every BCG event looked and felt the same. We were tracking and measuring them the same way. You know, we were starting to think about, you know, how do we ensure that we are using events as a growth channel and not just a nice to have add on to any kind of regular marketing program.
There's so much in there which we'll kind of dig into. I think I've already got the title for this episode, which is "What Organising the Sixth Form Prom Taught Me About Professional Services Marketing Events."
Good one.
But maybe that's a separate conversation. I think that's really fascinating in terms of how that role came about, and actually that kind of strategic thinking behind, let's take a step back, look broadly around that events program as a whole. From that, I mean, and from your experience of doing that role for so many years, I think, what is it that makes a good event for a professional services firm? And that's a big question, and I'm sure there's lots of different ways of coming at it. So take it whichever way you want. But yeah, what is it that makes an event successful?
Well, I guess like organising the sixth form prom, it's about giving them enough food and drink, essentially. No, I'm kidding. I mean, it isn't a lot more complicated than that, though. I think, you know, events are all about bringing people together, whether that's virtually or in person. And I think, you know, regardless of what you're trying to tell them or sell them or showcase to them, it's about making them feel human, making them feel valued, and giving them a really good experience from the moment that they register for your event to the moment they walk through the door at your event or log on to your event to the moment they leave. And so, you know, getting the fundamentals right is really, really hard and takes rigor and consistency and expertise. You know, not everyone can do that or can appreciate the finer details of that experience. But I think essentially it's about giving them something that they can't get anywhere else at a time that's important to them. And it's not about a time that's important to us as a company trying to bring them together. It's at a time that's important to them. And it's, you know, wherever they are on their buying journey, wherever they are, you know, in their role as a CFO or, you know, a marketing manager, it's about really being relevant at that point in time and offering them something that, yeah, they can't get anywhere else, but, you know, that can manifest in itself in terms of new insights, new content, new people that they might, you know, not normally get to, you know, have a coffee with or have a cocktail with in a way that's creative. And that just speaks to their fundamental needs as a human, which is, you know, to learn and to feel valued and to come together with other humans that have the same mindset as them. So some of those fundamentals, I think, are just something that, you know, have carried me through my events journey. Definitely what we come back to time and time again in terms of, yes, we have to have a really great speaker and a really, you know, really great content. But actually, when I think about what I want to take away from an event, you know, as an attendee, it's, you know, it's feeling like, oh, I've stepped into somewhere that I feel really comfortable in and that I am, you know, I can be my authentic self and I'm going to take something away that's going to help me tomorrow.
I think that's really, really interesting. And there's something in there that you said that really, really kind of stuck with me, which is it's about doing an event. It's about doing an event at the right time for the people attending, not the right time for the organization that's hosting the event. And I think that's probably quite a light bulb moment, mindset shift, you know, for a lot of people listening. Because I think a lot of firms think we've got something we want to mark, celebrate, launch, and we'll do an event for it. But actually flipping that on its head and kind of uncovering the insight of the people we want to be attracting and turning that into content for an event, I think is really interesting. So how do you uncover that insight? How do you know where potential attendees or our target clients are on that journey? And how do you turn that insight into a core content for an event?
I think it's really challenging and comes back to that point about being really closely aligned and in sync with your partner team, your consultants, your business development team, who have their finger on the pulse of the clients and making sure that you've got a good dialogue with that team. I think listening to the market as well. I think, you know, of course, we can stay on top of market trends and what's happening in different sectors or industries or, you know, in different functions. So just making sure that we are being as futurist as possible with, you know, what might resonate. I think that's really hard though, and that's very resource intensive. And so I think especially why identifying really good partners outside of your organization to help you distill that and kind of create the right formats is really important. And that's why, in all of my roles, looking for third parties, you know, outside organizations who align from a brand perspective, but absolutely on the pulse of that consumer demographic or that client demographic is really, really critical.
Definitely. In terms of, you mentioned kind of the experience before, during and after the event, you need to make sure that all those touch points are kind of covered and thought about as part of that holistic event strategy. How much of that is turning content from the event into content for your other marketing channels afterwards in terms of repurposing, you know, so you're kind of making the most of that event? Because I think a lot of people listening and a lot of our clients that we speak to sometimes see it events or other marketing. And it's about how can we bring those two kind of tactics together, I suppose, so that you're getting the most impact from an event, you know, both online and offline. So what's your approach to that? Is it something you actively encourage in terms of content creation at events that is then repurposed, or actually is it something that you see as a standalone tactic?
Yeah, I mean, I see it actually more of a cycle, not rather than an elongated kind of linear process, especially when you are, you know, you have a core audience or, you know, a core group of individuals that you are marketing to in different ways over time. Events, especially coming out of the kind of post-pandemic time, should be, in my opinion, so much more than the kind of one and done experience, but you know, absolutely ingrained in broader campaign strategy, you know, multi-channel campaign at its finest, really, and not just post but pre as well. And I think where I've seen some real successes is where, you know, you're engaging with an audience ahead of time, understanding what, you know, what's important to them. Back to the earlier point, you know, what's really top of mind? How do we create an event that's going to address some of those challenges, or give them the space to address some of those challenges, and talk that through with their peer group or with other experts? You're taking those insights to create content, digital content, written content post-event, and then the cycle continues. So how do you then build on that for the next version, or, you know, the next group, etc.? And I more and more see, we don't talk about events, we talk about event campaigns, because they are so much more than that, you know, half day, 2 day conference, 1 hour webinar, because of the potential that that has to generate new insights, new conversation and follow-up material. We have to be thinking beyond that kind of quite restricted time frame, which we didn't really do that well before pre-pandemic. And I don't think it was the pandemic necessarily, but I think that moment to reset and just really think about why people come to events is so much more than that time we have together physically or virtually. And it's all of the other benefits that we can demonstrate through other types of marketing, both pre, during and post that event experience.
It might feel like a bit of an obvious question, but I'm really curious to get your thoughts on it. How do you then, keeping that in mind and making sure that that's the real focus of an event, how do you still ensure that you're putting over the thoughts and ideas and yourselves as a front runner, as the person who has the answers to these pain points and to these problems, without it suddenly becoming more salesy? And you know, it's kind of an age-old problem, really, but keen to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the past where I've seen that work the best is where the organizer of the event is the convener of the people, and creating the space and facilitating the discussion, the speakers, the content, to allow for that dialogue and that experience to bubble up without it being too salesy or contrived. And of course, you know, there is always a need for an expert from your company, or a demonstration of sorts, or insights that are very company led. But I think balancing that with the needs and wants of your individuals, again, coming back to the persona of your attendees and really what they want to take away from that event. It isn't to hear your, you know, expert on X talking about something for half an hour. If they really wanted to hear that, they would just pick up the phone and say, hey, come talk to me for half an hour. So it's, yeah, it kept coming back to that point around what would really motivate somebody to attend. And it's quite often because they're sat next to this person that actually is quite interesting, and, you know, they want to hear from them. They don't want to hear from you as a service provider. So I think it's hard, though. It's hard balancing everyone's preferences. But I think where I've seen that really work the best, it's actually creating the space rather than just creating noise.
I think that's a really nice point around, is that facilitation of discussion and the sharing of insights amongst the people attending, as opposed to a kind of, you know, broadcast of one to many. It's that kind of, how do we create the right conditions for people to learn from each other, but associate ourselves with that insight and that learning and that conversation?
Yeah, I think it's also worth saying that, you know, there's not one size fits all for event. You know, we're talking about events in quite a broad sense. And, you know, in my world, I would consider everything from a, you know, a 1 hour webinar when you've got something, you know, very specific, you actually just want to broadcast and, you know, share with people, right through to bringing them along to a cocktail evening where you've, you know, you're sharing some insights or having a discussion on a really meaty topic, or a 2 day conference where you're actually bringing them together for a mix of content and experiences and brand moments. And so it's difficult to kind of apply everything to everything. And there's absolutely a place for that broadcast sharing formats. But I think that's, again, why events are so great, because there's so many different nuances and permutations to formats and audiences and levels and objectives. It's like, it's so vast. It gets, as you can tell, gets me quite excited.
I think you're absolutely right, though, that it's one of those that it is such a broad term. And as you've said, there's lots of different ways of kind of coming at it and having impact. It's in the same way that there's no one type of event, I imagine there's no one single success metric. It depends on what it is that you're trying to achieve at that time. You've mentioned it a couple of times, and we need to talk about it. The pandemic that sat smack bang in the middle of one of your event-based roles at BCG. I don't know if you're uniquely placed, but you're definitely expertly placed to talk about that shift before and after, because you were in role before, during, and after. How did that impact your role, and how did your team adapt to that? And I think probably a follow-up question is, in your opinion, how did that change events and event marketing?
Gosh, I mean, what didn't it change? That time where we were pivoting, you know, expensive, relatively expensive, high-touch programs to virtual programs, which actually weren't not any less expensive necessarily, but just a whole new world of technology and, oh my gosh, where do you even start? Right through to trying to be the leading light and setter of best practice for how a huge global company should be thinking about this. And it was, yeah, it was quite a time. But I think the outcome of looking back to what we achieved and what we pivoted, how that fundamentally changed the paradigm of our marketing strategy from absolutely everything was live. No one would buy into the fact that virtual events would work. And then suddenly they're amazing and we should be doing everything virtually because it's such a cost-effective way of you know, engaging with people. And then the pendulum swings kind of back to center a little bit and we see a place for both. And I think that was, you know, really interesting from the ability to kind of test new ideas, to pilot new technology, to rewrite the rule book on what events are and why we do events and think about new event formats. It was just, a mile a minute. But looking back now, I feel really proud at what we achieved in terms of, you know, that pivot, that investment in all the new ways and new ways of working. But ultimately, a time to really reflect on a lot of what we've already talked about in terms of why, who are we doing this for? When makes sense, what format makes sense, and what does ROI look at? And you touched on that point, Dan, and I think that's a really important one because similarly, there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to that either. And so really coming back to having more choice to, you know, how we engage with those clients in what formats ultimately was a good thing for event marketers because we just had more buy-in from the organization who previously were very wedded to one way. And, you know, that was the only way that would ever work to now we have a whole suite of ideas and concepts and formats that we can play with in order to actually get closer to the objective or the outcome that you need at that particular time.
Do you feel that in the same way that it taught people to look at events differently or forced people to look at events differently and kind of, I suppose, move away from the traditional thing that's always worked and that's the only way of doing it. Do you feel like there's a broader mindset shift across, let's use marketing as the kind of lens for this, but a more broad mindset shift and an openness to trying new things to see if there is a different impact? Because I think outside of events, I feel like there's a more of an openness to testing and learning, given that actually what the pandemic shown is that there is another whole way of doing something that we thought there was only one way of doing.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure if that's strictly pandemic related or just in new ways of working more broadly and getting stuff done as marketers, you know, being more agile, being more reactive, being open to try new things, I think was just a kind of culmination of all of those things. I think change is hard, let alone in a large global organization where processes and governance is very, very tight. But I absolutely think we have so much more data now, I think, because of the switch up in formats, especially with virtual events, that allow us to get more creative and to be more reactive to how audiences are engaging with events. And I think that's definitely helped prove the points around what's working and what's not working, where pre-pandemic it was A4 postcard with a few tick boxes to say what events were, you know, whether you'd come again, basically, or like, did you like the sandwiches? And so I think just, you know, using technology to get your hands on more data to better inform new strategies, I think has been a really healthy part of that journey.
I'm curious to know, what was your favorite or perhaps most successful kind of during the pandemic events that you were involved in?
Gosh, yes. I mean, I think probably the one that sticks in my mind is a huge North America conference that we held, and the team in the US were, you know, worked on enormously hard for a number of years physically. It was an in-person gathering of a couple of hundred people, moving that to a virtual program, which brought new technologies, new ways to think about how we would engage and excite and bring people on the journey and stay with us on the journey for a half-day virtual event, but also opened up that event to new audiences. So maybe we can invite non-North America clients to that event. And what does that mean in terms of the content that we offer them or the networking opportunities that we can create for them? So that was one of the early switches in the pandemic, but probably the best outcome because it was such a heroic effort from the team to kind of reimagine every step of the journey and every element of what that event experience looked like. It was one that I will always look back at and think, you know, well done the team. That was pretty good effort.
And did you find that the adoption of, or I suppose the embracing of those new ways of working differed across different regions? That role was a global role that you were in and you had responsibilities. You know, you mentioned North America there, Europe. Was there differences in terms of how those events and that pivot was adopted, or did it not really make that much of a change?
Yeah, not wildly, I would say. I think there was definitely teams in various countries that had a bit more of a appetite to try something new, you know, whether that be a hybrid format, for example, or, you know, setting up a new network for a group of clients. So I don't think there was anything that you could assign to kind of global impact, but it just meant that everyone got a bit more creative and I think pushed the boundaries a little bit more of what we can achieve if we think about all the new things we can do. Now we have technology and new formats and new aspirations for what we want events to be. So I think it was more that, to be honest, rather than any kind of geographical nuances.
No, that's really interesting. I think you kind of touched on it a couple of times there, but what are those lasting impacts that you're seeing now become standard practice when it comes to event marketing? So what are those kind of, have those, some of those approaches stuck around? You mentioned hybrid there, and yeah, interested to dig into your thoughts of, you mentioned there's a sort of leveling out somewhere in the middle of bringing the pre and post pandemic approaches together. But what are those trends that you're seeing stick around?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the hybrid one's interesting, and I don't think many people got that right, to be honest with you. I think it was a good idea to be able to open up events to much broader audiences. But from the perspective of the person that is hybrid, that is, you know, not in the room, I think that's a really difficult one to get right. And so I'd love to be proven wrong on that and see some good examples. I think the overarching point for me is around less is more if it's more meaningful. And so really holding the bar higher to why you'd run an event, what that means for the audience, and making it really high quality, I think is the best outcome there, or something that I hope to see continue. There was definitely a peak of virtual programs and virtual events, and that I think that's kind of petered off a bit now. Mm. But you know, when it comes to marketing to the C-suite, as it was just, you know, really where we've been focusing, and understanding what makes them tick as attendees, speakers at those events, you know, peers of attendees. I think it's about keeping the bar as high as it can be in terms of homogeneity of group and the experience that you're offering them. So in a resource-constrained environment, then I think that has to mean less is more, but just do those things really well and make it really, really great experience for those attendees.
I think that brings us round really nicely to the first event question that I asked, which is what makes a good event? And it's all about experience and thinking really deeply about the people that are going to be attending and what they might want and the value you can offer. So no, I think that's really interesting. That's really, really great. And I think keen to kind of come up to almost present day in the sense of towards the end of last year, you called time at BCG and moved on to Gate One, stepping into the CMO seat, which I imagine had a broader remit than events necessarily, and keen to kind of dig into what motivated that move and that change, and what is it that you found really exciting about the opportunity?
So yeah, I think the Gate One opportunity was really hard to refuse, to be honest with you, from, you know, given the space and freedom to create a plan that would accelerate the whole company to the next level was really, really exciting. You know, if I think back to even pre-BCG days, as a marketer working in an industry and then a functional team, and then at BCG it was the country, and then in the global role, this felt like a natural progression to that. But you know, almost back to square one in terms of the team and the resources. And you know, Gate One is only 10 years old as an organization, and on a phenomenal journey of growth and integration with, you know, parent company Havas. And so all of those component parts was, yeah, just really interesting and exciting for me. And actually, I was really, really looking forward to getting back to non-event marketing, and just kind of really thinking about the buyer journey, the end-to-end piece again, you know, really taking it back to creative stakes. And, you know, as you know, with creativity is very high on the agenda at Gate One. And so, yeah, I was really drawn to all of those elements. And also the people that I met on the journey to getting off of the role was just really compelling. And yeah, haven't let me down so far.
You mentioned creativity there. And I know it's something that you actively promote and encourage, you know, culturally within the organization as well. When there's such focus on data, ROI, results, how do you create the space for that creativity alongside that? And how do you make sure that creativity means that things are happening and are driving results, but are also creating space for trying new things that may not work? Interested to hear your approach to that. And also actually, your definition of creativity in that world?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been really refreshing to be in an organization that considers creativity a superpower in that regard, and actually actively creates the space and time for anyone in any team to be creative, you know, right through from mentoring and coaching on how to be creative or how to create the space for that. So, you know, blocking out time in your day, getting into new spaces, using playful techniques and other toolkits to kind of eke that out of oneself. It's just been a joy for that to be okay in an organization, and, you know, that to be, you know, really encouraged, even down to the fact that, you know, the office space has spaces for creativity, and, you know, you can go and play with Lego or Play-Doh or origami or, you know, the such like, to kind of just get into a different frame of mind to allow creativity to flow. But, you know, as I mentioned, being in a marketing and communications agency, there's a certain element of pressure to be creative. And I think as a marketing team within that environment as well, I do sense that, like, oh, marketing can help you be creative. And it's like, holy moly, okay, now I need to be creative. So it's about kind of building the muscle, but also not afraid to say, that's not going to work right now. Or, you know, we need to give it time to percolate through, and not always having the answers. But as a marketer, it's been, as I said, refreshing and just an amazing cultural experience to be allowed to just kind of take a step back and suggest some really creative off-the-wall ideas and concepts that maybe I've been afraid to kind of bring before. And yeah, just having the license to speak up and no idea is a bad idea. And like, hey, if it doesn't go anywhere, that's okay. It's okay to fail at something or to not have the perfect answer. But, you know, here's the space to go and try has been great. So yeah, and I just think as a marketing team, it just feels really empowering and exciting to be given that license to go and be creative in whatever permutation that means, from, you know, how you create your marketing plans to kind of visual identity, or the way that we want to tell our stories, or the way that we want to engage our internal audiences. So it has lots of different permutations in how we actually think about creativity.
That's great. And I imagine the team feel the same as well. And it probably will be, and you'll be able to tell me if this process already started, you mentioned back when the marketing team at BCG scaled and grew, I imagine is going to be a similar point in time with the team at Gate One. And that, I imagine, will be a really attractive proposition for people looking for that role, you know, that culture of creativity is actively encouraged and is at the core of what you do. And I think what that probably brings me on to is that time at Gate One, you've been there since September last year, and I imagine you have a long-term plan about what you want to do there. But really interested in digging into what that sort of first 8-9 months has been like, and what are those first steps that you've taken in that time?
I guess in a similar way to when I landed at BCG, it's about walking the floor and getting to know and understand as many teams and individuals as possible. And it was easier to do at Gate One, given the size of the company, but just kind of really listening and absorbing as much as possible around ambitions and plans, etc. I kind of landed at a good time because we were in the throes of business planning. And so it was kind of straight in at the deep end in actually getting quite tactical about what the next few months and year would entail. So yeah, I think just getting stuck in, getting straight into it was really the trick. The team were phenomenal on helping me come on board and, you know, helping me understand all the good stuff that's gone before and what's worked and what hasn't worked. And again, that kind of continuous feedback loop continues to this day where we're, you know, always checking in and asking the question and what's working and how could it be even better, like going forward, what would that look like? And I think not being afraid to just say it how it is, you know, having a seat at the partner table and being able to give it to them straight about, you know, what's needed has been also really refreshing and quite energizing, actually, and just kind of them being in listening mode as well and wanting to understand the power of marketing and what that can do for them and the organization. And yeah, I mean, it's not been perfect, but, you know, we're on a journey with that as well. And I think we, you know, we're holding true to our marketing manifesto that we set out at the beginning of the year. And as I mentioned before, a big part of that is just sharing and communicating that to the business so they know and understand the vision and the plan and the journey that we're on and the role that they need to play in that as well. You know, it's not just, we're not serving them with marketing, you know, we're building that together. But yeah, that's part of what I love about coming to work every day is just talking to anyone in the organization about their ideas and how we can help shape that together. And, you know, starting to see some really phenomenal results from some of our plans this year so far. So yeah, so far, so good.
Very exciting. And such interesting parallels to your first role at BCG. It feels like you've come full circle and,
yeah,
and back to similar challenges, similar stage of growth, similar kind of approach, I suppose.
There are definitely a lot of parallels. So I, you know, I'm very lucky to have had that experience, even if it was 10 or so years ago. There's definitely lots of learnings and ideas in my toolkit that I've been able to dust off and kind of bring to Gate One. So yeah, it's been a really good experience so far.
Exciting. And talking of exciting, without giving too much away, you mentioned it's a constant journey of improvement and looking forward, as it should be. But what's next for marketing at Gate One?
Yeah, so I think we are scaling the team, thank goodness. So growing out the team a little bit initially to help on some of our kind of key strategic priorities around events, funny enough, and a couple of other areas. I think we are, I guess, every area of marketing thinking about, you know, really trying to get under the hood of what technology we need, you know, what data we need, how we join up better with our business development teams and support account journeys and their growth story. You know, how do we think about every channel in a different way? And I think that's, you know, that's an ongoing journey that we're on. But, you know, being able to kind of try a few things along the way, whether that's, you know, new formats for social or new ways that we present our content or new event formats, it's been great to just like get stuck into that as well. So I guess to answer your question, it's about a balance of, you know, keeping the high level strategy on track and, you know, with very close eyes on the business plan and what that means in terms of business development and how we support our sales teams, right through to getting even more creative and more experiential with our channel activity as well, and supporting and nurturing the team along the way and, you know, setting them up to succeed as marketing leaders of the future as well. So everything all at once, I would say.
That sounds very, very exciting indeed. And probably a good place for us to finish. It feels like that's an excellent point. So yeah, thank you very much again for joining us today. It was a brilliant conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I think there's so much great insight. I've been making notes and having thoughts all the way through. And I feel like we could talk for another hour, if not two more, about the ins and outs of events and the benefits of it. But maybe we'll do a part two. So yeah, thank you very much, Kate, for joining us today.
Thanks, Kate. It was wonderful to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.